Morning. Stephen Mayne, small shareholder. This is a question, I think, which is also relevant for tomorrow's AFIC AGM. I've put up a resolution for the News Corp AGM in New York next month, which would propose to give non-voting shareholders the vote, which would have the effect of reducing Murdoch family voting control from about 40% to about 15%. I think it's a very shareholder-friendly resolution, and I'm just interested in the voting position of companies like this company and AFIC, which together I think have more than $130 million worth of shares, and I'm conscious of the corporate relationship between News Corp and Goldman Sachs, J.B. Weir in particular, where, I mean, you know, as Terry Ann Bruce would well know, it goes back a long way, whether it's the float of Pac Mags or various other ventures. And I'm just interested in the process by which you would vote that stock on that resolution. Is it completely independent? Is this board completely independent of the Goldman Sachs corporate relationship with News Corp in deciding how it will vote that stock, bearing in mind that the whole board of News Corp has said we don't like this resolution because we like Murdoch family control? So it's, I know it's a slightly awkward one for the House of Weir, and I'm just interested in the appropriate process by which you would be approached in terms of how you vote that stock, and just to seek an assurance about the independence of your process given the corporate relationship. And I ask this for Terry because Terry would have had carriage very much of part of that corporate relationship, and he is the closest ongoing link in an executive sense to Goldman's on this board.
Thank you.
Stephen, it probably doesn't technically come under this particular motion, but it would be relevant a bit later, but I'm happy to tell you what we do just the same, because it's not the House of Weir. Some of us had our roots there, but one of the important things that we've stressed over the years is the importance of truly independent, non-executive, independent directors, because we've always sought to make company decisions, Djerriwarrh decisions, in that mood. Every proxy that comes to the investment committee, that's where we handle them, at which all the directors are entitled to be there, is examined. We look at it against ISS recommendations, but our own team look at it, and it becomes it's not a put through. We look at it against the background of the company's interest. I've always been passionate about this thing. It's one of the sometimes people say we've got too many directors, but I've always felt that this was one of the critical issues. I've lived in, you know, the media as well as I do, how often for years people used to say that Weir's stuff was dumped into these companies. We've always sought to have really strong, independent directors whose livelihood was not necessarily dependent on their director's fees, so that you could make those independent decisions. And that's how we look at that one, as we look at all of them. But, I welcome the question, because I think the whole question of the corporate governance and the independence of the company is very important.
Chairman, I know that we have the same, effectively, management team across the different funds. So the figures that appear for Ross and the other managers in this annual report are not multiplied across all the other annual reports. It's just one consolidated figure. Yet it's obviously different for the board, where we have a single set of figures that apply for the single listed entity, which obviously does put an extra layer of cost on the on us shareholders. I guess I struggle to see why we are separate from AFIC. I mean, we seem to invest in the same sorts of stocks. I just can't understand. I mean, Mirrabooka is different. It's a small caps. AMCIL's media communications. I mean, I've invested in all six of your funds. And I just can't see any difference between Djerriwarrh and AFIC. And we have the one set of managers. What is the rationale for having, must be close to 20 non-executive directors across the group, particularly between AFIC and Djerriwarrh, where it just seems to be six of one and half a dozen of the other in terms of the companies that you're investing in?
Well, I think the thing is we find that the collective, there are significant cost savings and advantages to us in working from that central core of research. It's a bit, your question, a bit like the one over here. I mean, what's the difference? Ross, again, we always have these meetings. Ross gives a description of what's happening in the engine room, and that I think will help to give you the experience of what is the difference. They are Epic and Jerry, I always call it Jerry, different companies. They have a different emphasis. This one particularly is seeking, as it says in the annual report, to enhance income, so that we're trying, particularly through the option market, which involves selling potential blue sky, to increase the current returns. That involved, just an example, that would, I think at the minute about 40% of the portfolio is optioned. And there's a lot of difference between the two companies. This is not you, but we find it hard to convince sometimes the analysts in the market that there is a difference. And actually, people have been to these meetings over the last few years in interstate. We spend most of the substantive time on trying to explain how the company works and how it is different. It is different, and the focus is really to give shareholders who want a bit more income now that outcome. So I'm not quite sure the return is of the order of 5% or something, whereas the 50 leaders, I think the yield would be, what would it be, Mark? High threes, fully franked. But would you mind if we go keep that?
Yeah, sure. Chairman, look, thank you for your excellent presentations. I found them very helpful in explaining what you've been doing. I've just got a couple of comments and a couple of issues which will maybe take no more than 2 minutes. I think you probably missed the boat on the resources side of things. It's good that we're heavily invested in BHP and Rio, but there doesn't seem to be much of a holding at all in Oxiana, Zinifex, Newcrest, Fortescue, some of those other sort of second tier, still multi-billion dollar companies that have gone booming along. I'd be interested in why we've steered clear, particularly of Fortescue, as that's been the single most explosive stock in the last little period. Also, the cross shareholdings that we still have with some of our other funds, AFIC being our largest shareholder, in an ideal corporate governance world, you wouldn't have those sort of structures. And I know that there's also the odd cross-shareholding between Argo and Milton and some of the other listed funds. Is there really a need to maintain those in 2007? Chairman, I remember it was well reported back in, I think it was 1994, that the House of Weir declined to participate in the Tabcorp float based on a position that it didn't want to be involved in gaming stocks. I'm just curious as to whether that is a policy that we have at the moment at Djerri. I notice we don't have any PBL, Tattersalls or Tabcorp shares, which personally I think is a good policy. I think that it would be welcome to have that policy across the group. But if that is the policy, why are we in Woolworths? when Woolworths are running 6,000 poker machines and are actually the largest poker machine company in Australia. So if we have a policy, why isn't it being consistently applied? My last issue, it's slightly self-interested, but it also goes to, I think, an important point of principle. What's your view, Chairman, on whether who should decide the size of a board, whether it's a matter for the board or whether it's a matter for the shareholders? And the example I give you is that I've nominated for the board of West Australian Newspapers. We have a 34 million shareholding in that, and that board has said there's no vacancy. So they said, we've only got four directors, there's no vacancy. So if you want to vote for this guy, you have to sack the chairman, which frankly I think is an unreasonable position. The equivalent would be Warren Buffett, not that I'm in any way comparable to him, but if Warren Buffett nominated for this board and he was up against you, chairman, you then came out and said, well, if you want Warren, you've got to sack me. And it's an unreasonable position. So I guess the basic principle here is that a size of a board should be up to the shareholders. It shouldn't be for a board to be able to say, oh, no, we'll just say that four is the maximum now. And I've had this experience on no less than 16 occasions where a 100% vote in favour would still have lost. So the effect of this no vacancy rort, which I call it, is that 100% still fails for the outside candidate. So I'd just like to hear your comments on the principle of whether it should be, excuse me, it should be the shareholders who decide if they'd like to add another director or two, or whether it should be the right of any board to unilaterally decide what is convenient for them as to a maximum, an arbitrary maximum that they declare at any point in time. Thank you.
Well, there are four questions, and I'll try and handle them as quickly as possible. Why not Oxiana, which is a good example, or Fortescue? We are about enhancing income. And we've traditionally stayed very close to the solid dividend paying resource companies. Also, we tend to stay fairly close to the top 50 where there are viable option markets. So that really is a bit of a stab at it. Were we nimble enough to buy them in the trading? Well, I think the answer is we weren't looking in that space. I doubt if we will be looking in that space. It's because we believe, the feedback I always get from the shareholders, we're in there for the dividends. We want more dividends. But it is a balancing item because if you've got a low yield or no yield, and there is no potential for option premium, maybe it's not necessarily our space. There have been some exceptions. One example is that we've been very, very keen on coal seam methane, and Queensland Gas is a company, but that's generally how we approach it. In terms of the cross-shareholdings, when it comes to anything to do with cross-shareholdings and that, we have subcommittees of the board where people who have any interest whatsoever are not involved. And Andrew, I think, has often had the job of chairing those subcommittees, so that we do try to take it that far. But basically, what they are charged with is the commission. Is this a good investment for this company? That's their charge. If it's not, then it ought to be sold. In terms of gambling stocks, One of the hardest issues I've found in the investment markets over the years is drawing a line. I can remember years ago when the firm had a policy, we as had a policy of no grog. So these investment companies where Mr. Rickardson was guarding them, we had no breweries, but it was very hard because then the company had shares in the ones that made the bottles and shares in the ones that made the cans. And I found that it's very, very, very difficult to run a company by drawing hard and fast lines. We have had a policy, as far as possible, to avoid the betting stocks. I'll come back to what about the Woolworths and the Coles, but we've sort of said this is out there in the open, the same with tobacco and ammunition and that sort of thing. We think to ourselves, no, this is a decision that the shareholders will make for themselves. And we've often enunciated at these meetings, and usually shareholders say, well, I'm really comfortable about that. But as you say, a Woolworths or something like that, we've had them for ages. There is that question. But we feel that a company of that nature or Coles, we just felt that the company needed proper exposure to those very important industries. So that's how we're approaching it. But we have these meetings, I have them interstate, and we welcome people's feedback. Finally, the size of the board. If you look in our companies, the different sizes of board. I don't have a hard and fast policy. I don't have one in regard to WA News. Obviously, we'll look at all that. We start from the position that if the company is doing well and the board is doing a good job, we start by starting fairly close to their position. But there are times when you need new directors, particularly if they represent a particular skill set. For instance, it's wonderful to have access on a board to somebody with legal training or accounting training. The way IFRS is going is becoming more and more gobbledygook. So I don't have a strong policy in terms of WA News, so long as they're doing the job. In terms of it's a board laying down, we're not approaching it on that basis. I think, as far as we're concerned, any director comes up for re-election, but we always talk about what we are doing and why we are doing it. And that's a general answer, Stephen. Yeah, sure. I don't want to go beyond that.